All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora. Ladies and gentlemen, what's up? This is Questlove, and you're checking out QLS Classic. So some time back, way back, I think around 2018, there was a mythical unearthed, with quotations, project called Top Shelf 1988. And it featured like a lot of the all-stars of the what I call the Latin Quarter era of hip-hop. The Latin Quarter era, known as the classic hip-hop era. A lot of those songs that are now staples in hip-hop, they basically got their debut when DJ Red Alert was spinning at the Latin Quarter. Luminaries like Chubb Rock, also Grandmaster Caz, Melly Mel, Smooth B of Nice and Smooth, Dreza Black Sheep, Master Ace, Grand Poobah, Jungle Brothers, Dougie Fresh, Special Ed, MC Light, Craig G, Big Daddy Kane, Bismarck Key, and of course MC Search. What can I say, man? This is like one of those rare summit meetings that I've always dreamed about, having a conversation with my my comrades, the guys that built hip hop culture as I knew and love it. Ladies and gentlemen, let's go back in time to a classic era in Questlove Supreme history. This is the Top Shelf 1988 episode. Let's go.
Salute that man hat.
Let's just kick it off. Ladies and gentlemen, do not attempt to adjust your dial. This is probably my greatest dream manifesting right now in front of my eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm surrounded by all my idols, literally in front of me. This is Questlove Supreme, only on Pandora. We have the world's greatest right in front of me. I'm going to introduce you one by one. Starting up, we have Sir Kane, Big Daddy Kane. Hello, how are
top
you doing,
show.
Sir?
Top Shelf, King Asiatic Top Shelf.
Craig G is
yes,
in
sir.
The house.
How are you, sir?
This is amazing. MC Light is in the house.
Woo. Good evening.
Hello. Special Ed is in the house.
What it is like, Flatbush, Church Ave, stand up, E Hall.
MC Search is in the house.
White people, stand up.
Oh, shit. <no.
laughs> We also have Benji Greenberg from Rostrum Records.
Yep.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Pittsburgh.
Did you bring me a Primani Brothers sandwich?
Oh, I got to go back and get you one. Oh, really? Sorry about that.
And brother Ayed El Khair. I know I'm going to butcher your name, bro.
It's cool.
No.
It's Ayed El Khair.
I'm going to say it.
All right.
One more time.
Ayed El Khair.
Ayed El Khair.
Ayed El Khair.
Yeah.
Get your Jew right.
I know. I'm trying to.
Hello?
One more time.
Ayed. El Khair.
El Khair.
Yeah, there you go.
I did it.
It means return
to goodness.
The only
Muslim with a Louis Vuitton scarf. Get it right.
Word up.
Sexy Muslim.
We are here to
I guess, kick off or celebrate the Top Shelf project. I can't stress enough to our listeners how crucial the year of 1988 was for hip-hop history. And, you know, to hear of this project. First of all, this came out of nowhere, at least for me. I'd never heard of this, the idea of, can you give us, who can best describe to me the history of the Top Shelf 1988 project, the genesis of it?
I'll take that.
Okay.
So I had moved to New York in 2000, was working at a record company as an assistant, mm-hmm. and I was working on producing and writing music at nights and on the weekends. And so I started making beats and I was getting better at producing. And a mutual friend of me and Chris's introduced us, and Chris was big into digging for records and, mm-hmm. and all that. And so he came over one day and we just made a track. And it ended up being the track. What was the first one we made?
Grand Poobas.
So anyway, we made a track and we're like, oh, this is really dope. But it sounds like it's like 1988. This is in 2003.
Okay.
And he kept coming over and we kept making beats. And all of a sudden we had this group of beats that we loved and we didn't know what to do with them because, you know, it wasn't like 50 Cent, who was popping off in 2003, was going to get on these beats that sounded like 1988. So we came up with this idea, like, what if we got like our idols from 1988 to somehow get on these records? And I didn't know anybody really. It was just like a dream. And then we came up with this whole backstory of Top Shelf Studios, and all the tapes were lost in the Tompkins Square Park riots. And we were just dreaming in my bedroom, literally just like coming up with this story to somehow give this project some context. And it wasn't even a project at the time, it was just a dream. And so a friend of mine introduced me to Fab Five Freddy. And we went to his house and we played him a bunch of beats, and mm-hmm. He really liked it. He loved the concept of it, which was basically there was the studio from 1988 called Top Shelf. All the greatest artists came through there to record after shows, hanging out, whatever. And during the Tompkins Square Park riots, all the tapes were lost. And now...
Crazy backstory, by the way.
Thank you. and now, 15 years later, in 2003, we find these records, right? But now it's 15 years after that because we were able to make the record, but no one was interested in putting it out. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until we had success with Rostrum and were able to do it properly that it's now properly coming out, now 30 years after the mm-hmm. fictional Top Shelf Studios was looted during the Tompkins Square Park riots.
Wow. Well, yeah, I think it's only apropos that you do it on an even number, which is 30 years into it.
Yeah.
So it seems like it's all come full circle. How did you pitch this idea to the artist? Yes, to each member.
Well, I thought that by having Fab Five Freddy on my side would help. so because if it's like 2003 and it's just like, hey, my name is Benji and I want to make this record, that's, you know, so it was a lot more effective to be like, hey, me and Fab Five Freddy, because he came on as an executive producer of it mm-hmm. back then. You know, we're making this record and blah, blah, blah. And people like the beats. I think that's what it came down to, is people were feeling the energy of the project. I mean, you'd have to ask them, but to me it was like, you know, to me it was a celebration of the music that we grew up with and that we loved and what got me into music in the first place. And so I think people felt that energy, or I hope they did, which was just like, it was a celebration and it was just like a cool concept idea and like, let's just all get together and make a record.
So I have to ask, were the tracks initially made on an SB 1200 or?
No.
Did we cheat a little bit?
We cheated a little bit. We actually made them on an MPC 2000 XL.
Okay, that's close.
And.
That's quasi-close.
Yeah, so, you know. But yeah, no, we didn't make it on SB.
Well, definitely the spirit of 88 is in there. Like, I never thought I'd see the day where, you know, someone spitting over something that's 108 BPMs, which, you know, for me, like, I mean, I'm just a lover of fast rap. So even with Chubb Rock's track, which I was like, whoa. Like the second I heard it, I was like, oh, there's no way he's gonna match. And then he started like instantly out the
went
gate.
Off. Yeah, so, absolutely.
So I have to ask this room. There's one sort of common thread that's on almost every Questlove Supreme show, which I feel as though the common denominator of all of you is, of course, the Latin Quarter, of which no one salivates more over Latin Quarter stories than
I
do.
God.
So, yeah, without my cohorts here who will make fun of me of doing this, I have to ask questions about the Latin Quarter.
Tales from the Latin Quarter.
Oh, yeah.
Tales from the Latin Quarter.
Mama.
Tales from the Latin Quarter.
Tutu.
They literally, yeah, they made that jingle just for me because they know I ask too many questions of it. But for me, I mean, I'd be remiss to not let any stories of 1988 go by without
security.
Any
Latin Quarter
tales. First of all, was this room at all like socially? Because this is.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I'll tell y'all, man. I'm too young to know what y'all.
Yeah,
talking
I was gonna
about.
Say I don't think you.
Yeah, no, but this room right. for sure.
I don't know what y'all talking about. My pops really, told me about that spot.
It's really funny.
Actually, wait a minute. You two are actually Juice Crew members.
Right. Juice Crew All-Stars. Oh, my goodness.
I was going to say.
I was going to say, was Juice Crew members welcome in the Latin Quarter?
To agree with Ed, I was really young. But
really?
The Symphony was out. I was 15.
You had the Shout join when you
was
14.
12.
And
I was 12.
You were 12 when you made the Shout join?
Yes. And
Jesus Christ.
But here's the thing about Latin Quarters. I met Search in front of Latin Quarters when you had the Hey Girl song. And the way I wound up in Latin Quarters was I used to answer the phones at the Rap Attack for Mr. Magic.
Okay.
And some nights I would wind up in Latin Quarters with Mr. Magic, underage, scared to death. And I remember bumping into Search in front of there. I remember seeing a couple of shows there, but I didn't go often, but I would wind up there coming from the radio station. So it was kind of weird that New York didn't really care about your age then, because I had to have been at least 14 years old.
Yeah. Well, they made sure that you got a wristband for alcohol. So I was at Latin Quarters at 15, and it was okay. And I didn't even want to be near the bar. Like, it was so much going on just on a music front, and seeing all the dancers and everything, that liquor was the last thing on my mind.
I agree. I mean, I wasn't even, I think I maybe went to the bar, I can probably count on one hand, and it was all five times we're red alert to have poo-poo juice, because he would call us all to the bar, all the Violators, and have poo-poo juice, which was Myers rum, pineapple, and I forgot the third thing. But so that was his drink, and I've never been anywhere in the world where they know how to make poo-poo juice except the Latin Quarter and one bartender.
Rest in peace, Chris Lighty.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, Search is being modest, because Search was the king of Latin Quarters. It's okay. Like, you know, when you come in Latin Quarters, it's like just, you know, it's Red Alert, Paradise Gray, MC Search.
Really?
You know, that's how it falls. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like if you come in there and you don't see Search, you got to think something is wrong. For real. I mean, it was like he was the king of Latin Quarters. That's where I met him first. Like, really, like when he was the Hey Boy song. Like, I remember the night when Search walked in and Red threw it on and gave him love. And Search ran on the floor and started breaking it down, dancing. And everybody was screaming for him. I was like, okay, you see, that's what I need to be doing. You know?
For real.
Yeah.
Wait, now you mentioned something great. You said that when you would go with Magic. But I'm under the impression that Latin Quarter was more
Red Alert
Red Alert.
Well, now the thing about it was we're talking before the Bridge Wars. Like, we're talking when I had like the song Transformer out. Mm. That was a couple of years before the whole conflict started.
So what was the official first year of the Latin Quarter that we know? Is it 86?
Celebrity Tuesdays, 85. Tuesdays in 1985.
So 85.
Yeah.
The Celebrity Tuesdays with Paradise and LaMumba Carson.
No, maybe. Awesome Too.
Awesome too, right?
Awesome too,
right? And Paradise was working.
Yeah,
the door.
Yeah, Paradise.
But it was special, right? That's exactly right. Special K and Teddy Ted had Celebrity Tuesdays. That's exactly right. 85.
Yeah, it was before like the whole drama started. So I would go with Magic, and the funny thing is, Magic would leave me. I'd be at Latin Quarters by myself, just like, what the hell's going on here? And I never went to the bar because I had my little rope chain on in the corner. And you know who I would see? I would see Hawk. And he would make me feel safe.
Hawk and Dog.
Yeah,
and all
he would, that was my brother, because he would make me feel safe. And then I'd get a little confidence and hang out for a minute. But
he's talking about the guy that I'm going against in the Ain't No Half Stepping video with the Braves.
Hawk. Yeah.
Is this the Hawk that you gave a shout out to in Wrath of Kane?
Yeah.
That Hawk.
Yes,
okay,
sir.
Tariq, I'm about to play you out 1 second. For half a second before he was a Black Thought, Tariq was
Hawk.
Hawk Smooth. And his acronym was Hype African Warrior. Keep kicking his move.
I'm sorry, Tariq. Hawk is listening. I'm sure
sorry, Tariq.
Hype African Warrior keeping it smooth.
I'm sorry.
Good night.
But it predated the South Bronx Bridge beef. So I love you know it. What I mean? But that was kind of Brooklyn's. Yo, did you take the train from Far Rockaway there?
I did. I took the A to 42nd Street.
Mission.
I would take the A to 42nd Street.
Was Latin Quarter the was before the Latin Quarter, was New York just regional then? Like, was this the first Manhattan party in which you had to leave your borough to come to
it? For me, like, I was 83. So for me, 83 was Lynbrook, Hot Skates, Empire Roller Rink, United Skates of America and Queens. Like, the only place to really hear hip hop was split between hip hop and dance music in the five boroughs.
Well, Roxy and Dance Eteria, they were
real strict about young boys going in there. Like, they were real, like, it was tough to get in there when you were young.
Into Dance Eteria?
Yeah.
You were getting your hip hop from the roller rinks.
Without question.
My
Skate
first
key.
Empire.
Wow, Skate
Empire.
Key.
My first show at USA, I got booed.
What?
I think I got my first show at Empire Roller Rink, I got booed.
Yeah.
Because I had a trash record called Melissa that was trash.
The girl Melissa.
But I could dance really good, so that would save me. But that record was trash, because you got to remember, I went to high school with Dana Slick Rick, so I thought if I came out with a British accent, I would be fly.
Oh, my God.
And it was terrible. So I performed at Celebrity Tuesday because the Awesome 2 were playing a record. And I went there, and I got on stage, and people were looking at me like I'm an alien. So I started dancing, and they were like, go, white boy. So I was like, oh, okay. Like, this, I'm saved. Like, I figured it out. Like, I could be whack, but I could dance.
Okay.
And then Vanilla Ice came and just, you know, took that whole stee. But I decided to kind of grow and have lyrics and, you know, become something better than just a dancing and MC.
I see. Wait, you said you got, how... What song, though?
Well, I'll never forget it. It was, again, with Mr. Magic. Joski Love was performing, and I wasn't even supposed to perform, and something happened technically where Magic just threw me on the mic, and no DJ knew what was going on or nothing, and I had to kick an acapella, and they weren't really friendly with acapellas back then because it was dancers. So... you know, about 8 bars in, I think I'm kicking some hard rhymes. This is, again, before I heard Kane, and I threw, like, 7 rhyme books away.
Yep, right.
So my rhyme was mad basic. And like I said, I mean, I just wasn't good. And I was nervous as hell. Again, I'm, like, 14 years old. I don't know no better. But it didn't deter me. You know what I mean? But it was weird because when he mentioned USA, it was like one of the like, in Queens, everybody came to USA.
Yep.
But growing up in Queensbridge, the Reece Center was almost like a celebrity spot, so you had mad people come through. I remember being 10 watching Grand Wizard Theodore cut with handcuffs on, and I'm like 10 years old, like with my sheepskin on, just amazed at it. So I seen a lot of stuff, but my grandmother lived across the street from Harlem World and Foster Projects, and my brother would come home. The thing about New York back then is it wasn't as regional as you thought. There was somebody from any borough at any show. It didn't matter how far away it was. Brooklyn was always somewhere. So I would get firsthand copies of like the Fantastic Five, Coral Crush Battle. So I would say like even before Latin Quarters, like Harlem World was the spot. Like we like you had to be nice to perform at Harlem. I wanted to perform at Harlem World when I didn't even write rhymes. I just was rhyming off the top of the head nonstop, and I was like, Harlem World's the spot until I wound up at Latin Quarters scared to death or Union Square because I was always by myself. Magic would – I'd get in his car with him, and then he'd break out.
Just leave.
Union Square was my first spot outside of Brooklyn.
Really? Yeah.
My first hip-hop spot outside of Brooklyn.
That came matter towards fact, Rakim. The latter part, yeah.
Yeah, Rakim. Wow, I used to just go to Empire. I ain't going nowhere. I was a kid. I walked to Empire and walked back home.
Okay.
Yeah, so we just was in the hood, local spots, little parties in the hood and stuff like that, block parties. But, yeah, Rakim was at Union Square. My brother won tickets on the radio. Yeah, really? We went. Yeah, we went. And, you know, we never stopped going. We was like, oh, shit.
So even after Youngest in Charge came out and Legal, I don't know what the last official year of Latin Quarter was, but.
1988.
Damn. Okay, so.
Yep, that was it.
And it's really a very sad story because it's, I don't think I've ever told this story, but.
Don't cry though, son.
Yeah, nah. So gotcha. Me, Fat Raul, who was the original DJ, we came in there on a Thursday night, just kind of was me, Chris Lighty, may he rest in peace, Big Daryl, Red, and we just strolled up in there on a Thursday night. Mm-hmm. And Fat Raul was DJing, and we were going to turn it into a hip hop night. We were just like, "Yo, we're here! Like, let Red get on the turntables."
It wasn't a hip hop night.
No.
Or for Thursdays.
No, this particular Thursday was not a hip hop night.
And
it was a gay cabaret night.
And what were you doing?
You just decided.
No. You don't understand. Like we were just rolling around the city.
I'm messing with you.
It's no. I need to verify, baby. Like, be clear. Like, I'm verifying. I'm like Twitter with a check mark right now. I need to be verified.
You ain't had to tell this story,
so,
man.
I think it's important. We on Questlove Supreme. We need to get Supreme. So I spazzed out. Like I think. You know, I'd been smoking or whatever, and I spazzed out, and I told all the people that wasn't B-Boys to get out. And I said something real derogatory about gay people.
Right.
And I was like, if you ain't a B-Boy, you need to get out. And Big Daryl, he just got charged, and he went downstairs, and there was this cock diesel dude with his man. And we went up to him, and this dude knocked Daryl out, laid him out flat.
Ooh.
And Baby Chris grabbed me, put me in Mike Goldberg's office, and he said, you stay here. Mm-hmm. And then things started flying. I was in there for like an hour, just sitting there. I came out, place was trashed, empty. Mike Goldberg was heated, told Red never come back, told us never come back. And I come outside, and Chris and Daryl and Ali and Red are just sitting on Chris's Maxima, just sitting there. And on the corner of 47th and Broadway, and they were like, Search, go home. I was like, nah, they were like, Search, go home.
Damn.
And that was it. That was the last night.
End of the Latin Quarter.
That was last night.
Wow, that's crazy to even hear. Because, just knew that it was closed. It was like, what the hell happened? And
we knew at that point,
Union Square, the Sheraton Hotel. we knew that Union Square had kind of taken up, a lot of the slack. And it was younger and fresher and everything. But I didn't know that was the reason why.
Yeah, Mike shut it down.
That's crazy.
He shut it down.
Jeez.
I just thought it was all the stuff that happened when you left that closed it down. Cause.
No, and it's funny because you talk about Hawk and Dog Kane. Like Hawk, Dog, A-Rock, the original 50.
Original 50 Cent, Killer Ben.
But Killer Ben,
Big Shy,
all of those dudes. When I was in the Quarter and they were about to do their thing, the one thing I loved about those dudes is they would tell me, Search.
Yeah, that's what Hawk would tell me.
Like, always protected me like I was a little cousin.
Like I said.
Which leads me to this question. You knowingly would, I don't mean risk your life, but yeah, hip hop was so potent back then.
Yep.
No,
that even you're, I mean, basically, you're playing Russian roulette. Yep. You don't know what's going to pop off.
Because what would happen? No. What would happen? And I'm sorry, pardon self. What would happen was the quarter got so big, right? The rep got so big that the tunnel kids would come from Jersey, Connecticut, Long Island.
The Bridge.
It became a feeding market for Brooklyn and for Uptown. And these girls from Hempstead would come in, and they had the big earrings, and they were showing out.
Right.
And it was like, it was a shopper's paradise, man. Like Hawk Dog, Decepticons, like they went in, and they would just give you the high sign. And there were certain records when they came on, Ultramagnetic came on, or Rebel Without a Pause.
Ghostessa.
They do the dance. Those number drums. One change. They do the dance with the kick in the circle.
Yep.
That was it.
There was always something that was going to happen. You just wanted to get enough dance time in before it did.
Yeah. Quest.
So when that drum roll comes in on Stetsa,
you knew it was like Brooklyn's in the house or top billing.
Top billing.
You knew to tuck your stuff.
It wasn't even, you didn't have time to tuck it. Like IOU would be in the middle of the floor. So it'd be Fatima and Shake and Stretch and all of them.
All the dancers. Stretch was JAC.
Right. JAC.
That's school.
School.
So as soon, Lays, Reggie.
Reggie.
What's it doing with Nice and Smooth? Mike Swift. Yeah.
And as soon as that record came on, IOU was gone. And what would come in the middle of that crowd was every hoodlum that we knew, and we were already back.
And somebody's feathers just, from their coat was flying.
Oh, yeah, that's flying. Yeah. And girls were you're running out screaming because they were bleeding from the ears because their bamboos got yanked. And I don't know who it was. I'm not even going to point no fingers because I'm not getting thrown under the bus. But somebody from Decepticons, I remember when they went after Jam Master Jay. God
bless. That's what I'm about to bring up.
Yep.
Yo, rest in peace, Jam Master Jay.
Yep.
Kept his.
Word. They dragged him across the floor. 12
Brooklyn dudes on his back.
Kept
his.
Yep. He had the chain with the Adidas thing
Adidas
on.
The Adidas sneaker saw another day.
And Marv, may he rest in peace, he was with him. Hollis Crew was with him. And whoever tested
Hurricane.
And whoever tested him. And I mean, that's one of the few times I remember bullets flying in the quarter. Like you would hear them, pew, 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 like going past your ear. And you saw like, and he's holding on, and Hollis Crew, and and they're trying to pull it off of his neck. And they're dragging him across the dance floor. It's done. I mean, there's nobody there except for Hollis Crew and those dudes. And he kept his.
You remember when Jim Brown would run for a touchdown?
Yeah.
And you see like four or five dudes on his back?
Yeah.
That's how it looked. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Jay kept his, though.
No, it was
and a yet, crazy. And every week, I'll be at like, we going back to Latin Quarter.
Yes.
But you know what's crazy, though, Quest? Like, You wasn't at After Midnight in Philly? Like, you never... Like, let me tell you something.
I know.
Listen. Because
when they shut down New York, that's Kane, where we went. Kane, we had to go to Kane After Midnight.
Kane had the anniversary show, and he had Divine Sounds on it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Right? Ooh, right? Favorites. And I'll never forget this, because I posted it the day after, because I took a picture with them. I was having a conversation, and I heard the intro, 5+5... And whoever was talking to me, I jetted off and ran to the stage, because what I remember from that song was being at USA, and they B-Fats opened for them, and they came on and did that song, and when they said, "We're Defined Sounds and we're back again," somebody started shooting. And this is the crazy thing is, this is not about being gangster or none of that. I loved hip-hop so much, I wasn't mad at the gunshots. I was mad I did not get to hear the song finished being performed.
That's exactly right.
Word.
Yeah, like I was in a lot of dangerous places because of hip hop, you know, like, and I was totally oblivious to it because I just wanted to hear the music.
That's exactly right. So that's exactly. I remember going to Zanzibar to see you perform. It was a Juice Crew night. It was Shantae. It was you. Zanzibar. It was Master Ace. It was Zanzibar. Y'all didn't even make the stage. They played Lean On Me, and that place got shot up before y'all even probably even got in the limo.
How about Sensations though, with the little small hallway?
That one hallway. Sensations.
One hallway.
That was the first place
we performed the symphony.
Yes, the first. Yeah,
first place we ever performed the symphony.
Small hallway, man. Like a lot of stuff happened from that dressing room to the stage.
None. Yeah,
but I remember all those places. I want to remember. I want to know how you remember all that stuff, man. Like I don't.
It's
I think
in your
when your
heart,
life is on the line,
heart.
You can't forget it.
I remember the venues. Yeah. I remember the names of the venues, but I can't.
I actually
when
could
he
got
just
a memory
said the
like
small
a,
hallway.
Yeah, Sensations in Newark. That one little with the glass mirrors.
I remember it so vividly.
I remember
you performing at Hinchcliffe Coliseum in Paterson, New Jersey, with KRS, Boogie Down Productions, Audio 2, you. Roxanne, I got 34 seconds on stage to do a portion of something.
Okay.
I mean, and it was, the stage was on the 50-yard line.
I was,
and the crowd
I
was like 1,000 miles away.
It was like the Beatles at Shea Stadium.
And there was like 2,000 people in this stadium of maybe 10,000 people. And it was the greatest show. I mean, I thought hip-hop had reached its pinnacle. You know what I'm saying? Because really? It was like 87 or something. And there was actually like people in the middle of an outdoor stadium coming to a show because, you know, we were doing like, you know.
Close.
But we also doing the Spectrum. We were doing Madison Square Garden.
Philly,
you know,
New York
87
War.
Was really starting, you know, to pop off like that. Mm. You know, Run DMC and the Beastie Boys, they sold out the Garden, you know.
Fat Boys.
Right. All of that. But to see like people in an outdoor like a stadium. It was like mind blowing.
Yo, what's up? This is Fonsigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app, trying to find which spot is right for you. Now listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you gotta change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
For you, what were the like the most notable performances that occurred? I've heard the KRS One versus Melly Mel thing, whatever. I've heard that story, but what were in your mind like? What was the consummate unbeatable performance at
I would honestly say, to be honest with you, it would be when I first saw Public Enemy.
Right? Oh my God, I was getting ready to say Public Enemy at Latin Quarters.
Yeah, that
was the first time, or the Rebel Without a Pause time though.
Was it Rebel Without a Pause, or was it Public Enemy number one? Yeah,
it was that one. And he said, I remember him saying, I feel like I'm on a goddamn shelf. Because the stage was so shallow.
Yeah. Yep.
It was very high, and it wasn't very that shallow. Deep.
And the bass from that beat was rattling the club. Yeah. I'd never...
But what you guys don't remember, but you guys don't... There was two things. One thing was the first time they ever performed there was for their Yo Bum Rush the Show album.
Right.
They got booed off stage. Like, we were throwing batteries at them. They were terrible.
That was before.
No. That was no. And then literally a year later,
that's when I was there.
Rap.
Okay. Yeah.
But I remember, like, for me, like, to me, the shows that I remember were the transformation shows. I remember the Audio 2 doing I Like Cherries. I like cherries because cherries taste better and grapes are sour. That was their first
Was record. That a hit at the Latin Quarter?
No.
No.
I was going to ask.
No, it wasn't, but they did that at Latin Quarter?
Yes, the first time Audio 2 ever performed. And
before Top Billing?
A year before.
Absolutely before.
A year before.
They came out the box with I Like Cherries?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
They dropped I Like Cherries before I met them.
Okay. And I'll accept that.
I'll
accept that. You don't co-sign I Like Cherries. That's fine. And that's fine. But those transformations are the things that I remember the best because that was 87. And then they went to Top Billing and the place went bonkers.
But you know what?
So out the box, Top Billing was just an absolute
Top Billing
hit.
Was the second.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Top Billing was immediate. Immediate.
I got my deal because of Top Billing.
That was immediate. So. Mm-hmm. But let me correct myself, honestly. It wasn't the Public Enemy show, and I keep it 100. The goddamn Juice Crew show at the Apollo. When Biz came out the nose.
I think you're talking about Latin Quarters, though.
I meant Latin Quarters.
Oh, at Latin Quarters. Yes. Oh, it was Public Enemy. I thought you meant period. Like, okay. It might have been the Juice Crew show at the Apollo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Biz came out of a giant nose. Kane came swinging down from a damn ivory bench. I don't know. Remember when you came? This was the first time I seen a production. Like, and I'm down with these dudes. And I remember them not wanting me to perform Dropping
this
Science.
This came out of a nose?
A giant
there was a big nose on stage. First, boogers start dropping out. And then Biz fell out. Yeah.
I'll tell you another great show that I remember. It was winter. It was cold. And this was when Emerald City and Red Parrot were doing hip-hop nights. And they had a really interesting way to get to the club because the stairs came from the upstairs. Right? And that was really like a Juice Crew spot. Like, that was Magic's home. That was a Juice Crew house. Like, they were there every week. But Roxanne and Biz did their record. I'm Shante. Right? So they're at the Red Parrot, and I'm looking at the watch, and I'm like, I got to get to the LQ. I run to the LQ, having a good time, blah, 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 blah. And then everything goes dark, and we think, power went out or something. And then all you hear is Vic, 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 and then Biz walked out. And then Shante walked out in a full-length fur, and it was a wrap. It was a wrap. It was a wrap. There are very few shows that I remember where people went that crazy. That was a wrap.
Were these shows in which people would just perform their single and that was it? Yep. Or was it a full...
People would just show up and perform and leave. Yep. You would just come in,
two
get
songs,
busy.
Max.
Max. And leave.
The B-side than the A-side.
And you were happy. you were so happy. You were so happy. I mean, I hate to parlay it into this, and I'm not trying to, but like what makes 88 the golden era is because of this. It's because like everything kind of accumulated up. You know what I'm saying? Like 85 and 86 with Rakim and Kane and the Kane and Rakim battles, you know, not battles like beef, but battle who is the better MC and G-Rap with I'm Fly, rolling up my tinted window, raise my antenna because I'm not only fly, but I'm a break bread winner. Like, oh my God, Queens represent you. You know, and it was like all of this movement in 88. Like, time to set it straight, you know what I'm saying? Ain't no half-stepping word, I'm ready. Like, when he said that, when Kane said that, like,
We were ready. Like, it wasn't just him ready. We were ready. We were ready to be greater than the sum of what we were in the streets of our boroughs.
I think 88 was like, you know, transformation, you know, period, you know. Like during like the mid 80s, what was going on was like during the time of the show and a lot of that. It was like really like the hip hop party era where, you know, a lot of the hip hop dances played a major part and the whole crowd participation, that interaction thing. You know, it was that party feel that like cats like your Busy Bee, DJ Hollywood, Lil Buck Starsky were doing at regular parties back in the days. Now it's like on wax that way. But then in comes, you know, brothers, I think Rakim was first and KRS and then myself. And it started turning into a lyrical thing, you know. And I think at that point, you know, a lot of people were, you know, like really like stepping their game up lyrically. And the MC, his presence was really, really being felt, you know? Because, I mean, if you think about it, you know, back then, any artist that came out with his DJ, right, the DJ name came first.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Jazzy Jeff and Fresh Prince, mm-hmm, Eric B and Rakim, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, you know? It was like the artist was making their presence felt.
Okay, so from each of you, what song during that period did you hear that just made you, that just transformed your whole artistic approach? Like, you hearing something, like, Jay will always till this day talk about him hearing Who Shot You for the first time in his car, and that totally transforming his life and his whole approach to how he was going to be as an MC. And, I mean, I've heard this countless of times with different songs, but for you guys, which is the class of 88, 89, because me as a consumer, I cannot think of another year in which week after week after week was just some life-changing shit coming out every week. Literally, like, I mean, at least 24, 25 classic albums, like career-defining albums that year alone. So for you guys that are actually participating in it, was it a thing of like, oh, I'm a fan of it? Or were you like, did you feel a certain way when you heard Lyrics of Fury? Or like, damn, like, all right, I got to come with it. And like, what song from a peer of yours that made you feel a certain way? Like, damn, like, I got to come.
It's this damn guy right here, man. Like, being having access to Molly, you hear stuff early, and I think he had that little silver Cougar. And I get in the car, and he puts this tape in, and I hear Set It Off. And I was just like, okay, man, I got to go home, just put burn all my rhyme books. The old 1-2 rhyme step, and it's over. It's done. It's done. And then I remember this dude. I used to go out, like I said, I used to answer the phones at BLS, and I would come in early and listen to all the new records. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of Special Ed in my entire life then, and I put his album on, and the same way he was doing it with bars, but it was like effortless, like he was talking to you,
mm-hmm,
I was like, holy shit, man. See, now that, I can't be Kane, I can't be Ed, but I could be myself because Ed is being himself. He's dropping ill bars, but it sounds like he's not breaking a sweat.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. So there was a lot of moments in those times, not just 88, but in those few, that little corner of years, 88, 89, and all, like, MCs went from, you know, just the basic pattern of a regular bar in the cadences, rapping three words in one sentence, and it was like, okay, wait, you know, I started with shout, well, listen, everybody, my name is Craig G. I was like, okay, well, that style is done. I can't do that. When I heard Set It Off.
Oh, I know. Oof.
I was like, okay, man. And even before Set It Off, I can't hold it back. That one, I was like, yo, these dudes is rhyming like. And the funny story, I always tell this story, you know, I was at the studio when Rakim did Eric B as president. Shan mixed that song.
Mm-hmm.
And we were laughing at him.
Because Word?
he was punching in each line. And I'm not saying that's anything against him as a rapper. Maybe he didn't know how to record in the studio then.
Right.
And we were like, this is terrible. Like, I didn't know. And then when I heard it, like, a week later, Marley was turning records around in, like, a week. The next week on the radio, I heard it. I was like, that is not the goddamn same song I was sitting in the studio listening to.
And I'll tell you, that moment, I used to hang out with Eric a lot in the quarter, and I used to drive him out to Wine Dance. He had a little shorty that he had in Wine Dance, and because he thought I lived in the five towns, I lived near Wine Dance in Long Island, which was like 2 hours out of my way. I was just, you know, I just wanted to hang out with Eric B.
Right.
He gave me a white label of Eric B. for President on Zakiya Records. And I listened to it, and when I heard sitting on the couch with my feet up, you think I'm lazy, you must be crazy, you thought I was a donut, you tried to glaze me, I threw every rhyme book I had in the trash. And I'll never forget, the next day I went to see some homeboys that I just graduated high school with.
Right.
And I said to my man, G-Man Holt, may he rest in peace, I was like, yo, you heard that Eric B. for President? And we both said, thought I was a donut, you tried to glaze me. It was the craziest shit I ever heard. And then a month, 2 months later, this knucklehead comes out and changes the whole game. I mean, Wrath of Cain was another point in my career where I just, for a minute there, I was like, yeah, I can't do this. I can't do this.
I seen Wrath of Cain change Tariq's life. One of Lady B's apprentice was in high school with me. So he used to answer phones at Power 99 in Philly. So he'd often bring in like promotional 12 inches and all that stuff. So we heard like stuff ahead of time. But man, we were in fifth period. And he was at the door of school, and he held up. We saw the Cold Chillin' logo, and he was like, rooftop now. Somehow we excused ourselves from English class. Went to the rooftop, and he says, you got to hear this shit. And he, like, I'll never forget the collective jaw drop of 12 of us. Cutting various classes or whatever. Like, lunch period was different for something. Like, 11th graders.
You had a little blue school record player.
Yeah, we had like a little preschool, the preschool joint.
Crosby,
music.
The Crosby turntable. Look,
yes.
Like a suitcase. Yeah.
And we were just staring at, we did not know what that shit was. Yo, like.
I'll tell Light something that you don't even know. When you did I'm Not Having It with Paz K, I cut off K Love for like the rest of my life. Because when I did Hey Boy with K Love, like I wanted to do a record like that with her. And she was fronting, like she was like, yeah, I'm not, you know, nobody's trying to hear all that. And then y'all came out with that. And I was like, yo, chica, I can't fuck with you. Like, I can't fuck with you. Like, see that? We could have done that. Like, we could have done that. That to me was the greatest duet, top five dead or alive. That duet is just still to this day incredible.
What was the B-side to Cram to Understand You? What was it called again?
Take It Light?
No. The B-side. Had the ill bounce beat to it. I used to call Awesome 2 and request it. I used to call the Awesome 2.
I used to call the Awesome 2 and request records, too.
4 o'clock in the morning, they came on Tuesday.
No, the B-side to Cram to Understand You was Take It Light.
Was it Take It Light with the ill... I used to call...
Eddie Kendrick?
I used to call and request... I used to call Awesome 2 at 4:30 in the morning on a Tuesday morning.
When your mom, Take It Light.
If your mom's caught you on the phone...
She would whoop that ass.
And I would be calling and I'd be whispering into the phone, yo, Molly Ma lives in my building. Can I hear Fresh by the Fresh 3 MCs? Like, hip-hop, you know, you're drawn to it, man. Like, with the violence, all of that was, like, secondary. I just wanted to hear hip-hop. I wanted to hear dudes rhyming and to make me feel like I wasn't crazy for doing it.
Is there a record, like, and I always wanted to ask you this, but is there a record that you wrote that you even stepped back and you were like,
gave yourself a high five?
Yo, that you were like, man, the Most High gave me this right here, because this is crazy.
No, I think he was too in it. He probably was too in it to know, right?
Probably Mortal Kombat on my second album. Mm. Yeah. Mortal Kombat.
Really?
Yeah, because it was just that, just one line that just had me like, okay, yeah, I'm in a special place right now.
Yeah. Like, I remember being in the zone. When I wrote Gas Face, I was in the zone. When I wrote Black Cat Has Bad Luck, Bad Guys Wear Black, must have been a white guy that started all that, I literally stopped for a minute, and I was like, yeah, I'm never going to write a better rhyme like this.
Mine was the none of or in front of, because every one of my adversaries lack, you little son of, obituary columns of read your name. Quest, let me ask you a question, though.
Yes.
What is your favorite MC Light song?
I'm going to tell you something.
I can answer that.
No, I
do you
listen,
know?
I,
yeah.
Listen, I'm going to tell you something. See, as a drummer, I've never heard, I mean, Paper Thin's the first song with the rim shot was used.
Oh.
Everything was snare drum, hard snare drums. And again, it was, I mean, for me to get a what I call a War of the Worlds moment, which is Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, where people thought it was a real aliens attack and people staring at the radio like, what the fuck's going on? When I heard that song, I was, that was one of the, for me, even as a drummer, I was just like, yo, I didn't know you were allowed to do that. You can rhyme over
a rim shot.
You don't have to play drums. You can play rim shots this shit. And
it's crazy.
Literally,
the rim was hitting hard though. I mean, yeah, them drums.
And for me, the way that Tariq and I bonded, like Tariq thought it was such a novelty for a human being to like recreate shit. So to like get girls, Tariq would be calling like Tariq would call my crib at like 11 o'clock, which is like way past high school hours for your parents. Like my dad was like Joe Jackson, drill sergeant. Don't nobody call this house after 9 p.m. Like that sort of thing. Tariq would call like at 11, like, yo, like on three-way, have a joint on the other line. He'd be like, yo, run in the basement real quick and play Set Her Off real quick. I bet you, he don't know how to play Set Her Off. Yeah, he can play Set Her Off. Like, yo, man, my dad like might start riffing. Just play us off, man. Just go. Like, literally, that was his thing. Like, I bet you can't play. And he would call and be like, yo, play Paper Thin real quick. Like, just call girls up, like, I'm going to get a mirror to play a break. Even in school where we were, he would battle MCs in the cafeteria on the sixth floor. And all the instrumental majors were in the basement. And we weren't using the elevator. And I had this little Casio SK-1 thing. So the way that my dweeb ass was allowed to sit with the cool kids was I provided the breakbeats. And not the punching line. They would take an order. They'd be like, all right, run downstairs and play Funky Drummer real quick. So I had to run.
Are you serious?
I was the apprentice. Like, that's how I earned my way into, that's how Tariq and I became a group. And literally, like, you have like 1.7 seconds to get like a good 4-bar out of it. So you would have to play it twice as fast. Okay, that's good. Run upstairs. And then he'd be like, now I'm going to do Top Billing real quick. Run down set. That was me every day at Performing Arts High School. Like, Boys and Men were in the bathroom harmonizing, but me and Tariq were literally.
Now as an actual,
I met them in college.
As an actual drummer, did you have Synsonic drums? Did you have those?
The Mattel Synsonic, yes.
That's the I got that for Christmas.
Yeah.
I remember them.
I was doing Playing Rock on that night, day and night, night and day.
You know my favorite song from your catalog, right?
No.
10% this.
Oh, thank you. And yo,
where is intro though? Who was that? Matt Robinson saying whose beat did you steal this?
No, that was Mr. Magic.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Can you explain the genesis of the Impeach the President and Antoinette and how this whole thing started?
Can I answer that quickly? Duck Alert, I always accuse Herb of being a beat biter because when Kane did Raw, I felt like Kid and Play did Do This My Way. And we used to talk about it on the radio.
I know you did.
Yeah.
Really?
I didn't have a hard.
In Kid and Play
him.
Defense, though, they picked up that record, I think, the same day I picked up the beat for Raw.
Okay, yeah. See, but I said it in Duck Alert. I was like, Herb's a beat biter. So we always made fun of it, and maybe that's where you got Magic saying it from.
Oh, no, that's where we got it.
Yeah.
We taped it.
So you guys must really be perplexed now in 2018 where it would behoove the artist to actually mirror a track that sounds similar to what came out before.
I would welcome it now, actually, because it all sounds like one record to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the one thing that I love about this Top Shelf record, when I heard it, when I heard Light's record on this record, listen up, everybody, mm-hmm. I'm Light the MC. 5 foot, and I'm, yo, I started crying. Like, I started literally crying because it was like, oh my gosh, she took me to 88. And like, there's very few times this year I got like emotional over records. And one of them was watching Nas do Illmatic with the Kennedy, you know, Philharmonic.
Right.
Like, I lost my shit when I watched Illmatic and the 300-piece orchestra, but that simple little record, like her rhyming, like she was 17 again on a record that just came out like 5 days ago. I was right. like the Indian man in the garbage commercial, man.
With
I was
the
like,
single tear.
Yeah, I was wow. First of all,
still to this day, you know, I mean, how many people can you say still sounds that hungry on the mic?
Yeah.
You know?
But I only mean, y'all, but I mean, with all due respect, your record on this, yo, B, you went in, man. You went in,
thank
Kane.
You, my brother.
You went
thank
in. You. Ed went in. Drez went in. Doug's record's incredible. And they were dancing and singing and moving. I mean, yo, every record sounds like this celebration of 88. And it's why I went so hard. You know what I mean? Like, just from a marketing and promotion perspective, it's like, yo, this, it just sparked something in me and like put a battery in my back that I'm like, yo, there's a wealth of opportunity here for these brothers, for these icons and these legends to get back out there.
So what's the plan now that the album is out? What's the ongoing future plan for this project? Is this just
Good Morning America? I mean, you know, I told Light this and I didn't tell you this. Well, I told you over the phone a little bit.
But you'll hear it now on the air.
Yeah, no. But no. But my concept for the performance on Good Morning America is a small sample of what I want the tour to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because how we listened and absorbed hip-hop is way different than rock guys did. Because rock guys had radio 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. The Beatles, you could hear the Beatles 600 times a week on 52 stations between New York and Philly.
Mm-hmm.
So the music was absorbed by that boomer generation in a way that was very traditional. So when they continued to kind of recapitulate that music, it was easy. It's not easy for us. There was nothing easy about 85 to 92, 93. It was 3 hour spurts. Mm-hmm. And the only time you really heard music was how it was blended together. You'd go from Kane to Audio 2 to Rob Bass and Easy Rock to MC Light to a promo to da 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 da. So I feel like it's time to engage that essence, if I can't, like, and bring that out on the road. And that's kind of the Top Shelf tour and how I see it, you know, in the spring. And again, not to blow these two knuckleheads up that are right here.
Blow them up, man.
But Benji, like, he's spending money like it's a Wiz Khalifa record. I mean, with all due respect, and I'm not trying to dig in his pockets. I'm really not. But, like, the patience and the presence of mind to do what he's doing on the level that he's doing it, no one's done it for these icons. No one, like never, it's never happened.
All right, y'all, you know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you gotta change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? Well, no, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
I got a question for Benji and him.
Yes.
Being from Pittsburgh, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was y'all inspiration behind the beats? Like, did y'all get tapes from New York? Or, like, because a lot of the beats are in the pocket in that 88 sound. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? So, What was y'all inspiration behind the beats? Like,
I was from New York. I was born here, and I grew up in Jersey. And
So you had heavy access to it, yeah.
I used to watch Video Music Box every day after school. Mm. So, I mean, it was part of my childhood. So, mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, from Pittsburgh, we didn't have a Video Music Box, but we had,
Promani sandwiches.
Sorry, I had to.
No, you had a local video show. I forgot Homeboy's name, but you had a local video show. Mm. The kid that was on Buzz, BZZ, had like a video show. Mm. Yeah, not MC. Reggie Reg. The DJ that was on... not ZAK, that's Cleveland. There's a dude there's a dude in Pittsburgh. I don't know if you remember him, Kane, but he had a video show.
This guy's a wealth of knowledge.
I was just wondering. Gosh.
All the search? Yeah, you write it down or what?
No, for me, like,
you're like a scholar.
That I got
over
this
here, man.
Ghetto pass that these black men and women allowed me to make this music. Like, if I don't remember everything, it would be a disrespect to the people that allowed me to go into the quarter, that allowed me to go into Union Square. I mean, turn it just to 180. Like, Hawk could have just snuffed me the second I walked in there. Fuck out of here, white boy. It would have been simple.
Yeah, but you know what? In the beginning of hip hop, man, hip hop was for the not black or white or Puerto Rican. It was for everybody. We was all involved in it. Mm-hmm. Because it was music, it was a rhythm, it was something that brought together all the people from the hood that ain't have nowhere else to go, or something to have in common. It was a way to communicate and a way to party together. Y'all had your different crews coming together, partying together without beef.
And I respect that, but B, I ain't seen Nan white boy in any park jam that I ever went to from 1980 to 1986, except for Vanilla B, a.k.a. Blake Latham, a.k.a. Lord Scotch, a.k.a. Kiway K. Like, I saw Nan white people anywhere.
Even then, you were literally the one white person at
the only white person. There was a joke, understanding in mathematics, who used to do the big parties in Prospect Park when the 5%ers used to get together. You remember that?
Mm-mm.
Understanding had this big book of life, and he'd come on in. I used to sneak into Prospect Park and watch the 5%ers break. Yo, he would say that Search is the only white person except police at the park gym.
Okay.
I mean, there were Nan white people. And that's why I got so mad. Like, I got mad. Like, 86, like, a group came out on Select Records called BMOC. And it was a guy named Shecky Green and this other dude.
Shecky? They were on Capitol, actually.
No, they weren't. They were on Select.
Are you talking about Prospect or Fort Greene Park?
I'm sorry?
Prospect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they was on Capitol.
No, they wasn't. The Beastie Boys were on Capitol.
Shecky's first group was
called BMOC.
Bad Men on Campus.
Yeah, Yep.
Yeah.
They were before the White Boys. He was on Polydor. Yep.
Yeah. Same time. I'm about same to time. Look and it up. White Boys on. And then I'm the White Boys. Sure. And I'm like, all this corny shit. Like, yo, fuck out of here. Excuse my
they
language.
They had the
like,
rugby but I was like, shirts
yo,
on.
You know
on
what I'm color. Saying? Like, yo,
does
it was.
He know
it was
that I said, shut the fuck up.
No, I know you did, but I just, you know, it's disrespectful. And my daughter Mia's here. Like, I don't, you know. But it's like, you know, like, I just don't want. I was mad. Like, I was mad. Like, you can't come in here. Like, you don't know what I went through. Like, I was battling in Vandermeer Projects. I was Pink Houses. Like, I was tearing dudes down for money and, like, getting shot at. Like, don't come in here with some Connecticut nonsense and call yourself BMOC. Like, I'm not seeing you.
So when did you guys feel that the spirit of hip-hop, at least the transformation of it, was slowly eroding? Like, what was your first uh-oh moment? And I don't mean like, oh, when this guy rose to prominence or whatever, but like
when I heard women referred to as bitches by NWA, I was like, something's about to happen. Something's different. Because I had never heard Kane, KRS-One, Slick Rick, Heavy D, Fresh Prince. I never heard any of them refer to a woman as a bitch.
Even Go See the Doctor was like respectful.
Right.
The word was skeezer.
Yeah. And that was really shady. Like, my mom would not let me say skeezer in the house.
Yeah,
the word. You know what I'm saying? Like, but I will tell you, for me, I'll never forget this. I went to Roanoke, Virginia on tour with Kane. We went back to back. And the first year we went, it was Kane, Queen Latifah, Digital Underground, Third Base, Nice and Smooth. 89 Roanoke. Black crowd, college crowd, felt good. You know, it felt like any other place. We went back a year later. Cara Lewis booked us a year later in Roanoke. It was all white people. All, and screaming for Kane, and screaming for Digital Underground, and screaming for
all
of that.
So was that the MTV effect?
Totally. Mm. Totally. And for me, like, I was through when we did Pop Goes the Weasel, and we went out on tour, you know, and we took Cypress and Naughty and Tim Dog and all that. And we would get to Pop Goes the Weasel, and these drunk frat white boys would come on our stage and try to do stage diving. And our dancers were from Long Beach. We weren't having that. We would body slam these dudes like they were rushing the stage. Like, we were snuffing them. Like, we didn't know what they were doing. Like, I was done. Like, for me, I was done. Like, I was like, this is not what I expected.
Shout out to 88 for you saying snuff.
I know another moment that was different for me was...
I could have said Duff too, right?
Seeing all of those women in the hot tub with Puffy and Biggie. I was like, wait a second, what's happening here?
Really?
It was a lot. You know, as a woman looking at these visuals, it was like I was really confused as to where we were headed.
But you try to flip it on him with Hit a Rubber Room. You try to flip it on him.
Flip what on him?
You try to flip the sexuality on him. You try to take your sexuality and you were saying what kind of guy you liked.
Oh, yeah, that's fine, but they wasn't naked. I wasn't in a hot tub with four or five.
No, I'm not saying that.
It rattled me.
Maybe they needed a bath. I don't know.
For me, it wasn't the music. It was when they started First Week Sales.
Huh.
All of a sudden,
post-Soundscan.
All of a sudden, they stopped developing artists. And all of a sudden, it just jumped into who could say the craziest thing and get the most. Like, pre-social media, pre-going viral, it was what you could say on record to get the most attention. And the first week sales kind of like took away from artists being developed, where you had to go open up for somebody, you had to follow the tour bus in the van, you know what I mean? It turned into something else where if your album didn't pop in like 3 weeks, it was over. You know what I mean? Like, not even in hip-hop, there was other genres of music where the album had been out for a year and didn't catch on, and then it caught on. So to me, the first week sales kind of ruined
the chance of growth.
Yeah. I remember me and Pete and Clark Kent were doing a party at Irving Plaza when Palladium was open. And a young group got on stage in 1986. Nobody knew of them. A group called Raw Bass and Easy Rock.
They were on Profile. My man Steve Plotnicki, who was head of retail, said, "Hey, can you get these guys a slot on your night?" They came on. They did a song called "It Takes Two." Didn't move nobody.
What?
Didn't move nobody. Clark Kent played it. Easy Rock got on the turntables. He was rhyming. No one could care less. A year later.
Was it the sound system?
Nope. Sound system was bumping.
They was unfamiliar with the song.
I
want
to rock right now. I'm Rob Bass and I came to get down. I'm not internationally known. Nobody was trying to check for them lyrics. A year later, it was a rap. Yeah.
Popularity, man.
But I'm talking about the timeline. You know what I mean?
They actually like if that record
came
record,
out now though. And it didn't pop in 8 weeks, it'd be a rap.
Yeah.
Be a rap. This record developed over a year.
That's a long time.
You know when I notice a difference? I notice a difference listening to radio and seeing what was in heavy rotation. Because, I remember when we came out, NWA, Eazy-E, they was popping and they was selling a lot of records, but didn't get no radio play. Skywalker, same thing.
Was New York, I know in Philly we had a sort of no rap work day. Like suddenly in 90, 91, suddenly it was no rap work day. Like they took away Lady B's Street Beat for like a good 2 years. It was like hard as hell. Then we had to depend on college radio.
But I'm saying, what I'm trying to say is
but
like,
did
you know,
New York
even
ever
like,
have that at
no,
all?
I don't think so.
So,
but I'm saying you didn't hear no NWA on the radio. You didn't hear Luke Skywalker on the radio. You didn't hear the Ghetto Boys on the radio. But
we didn't hear no Too Short either. Nothing.
But they were selling a lot of records and they right. were popping.
Millions of copies.
You know what I'm saying?
Hammer.
But when you started hearing all the vulgar lyrics and the gangster rap being the main thing, mm-hmm. becoming mainstream on radio, that's when I felt like, okay,
something's
about to happen.
It's not ours. It's the agenda.
How easy or how hard was it to rock different marketplaces that weren't New York based? So if Set It Off could move you in 1988 in New York,
you had to understand
when
your
you guys would go to Phoenix or something, or like
you had to understand your catalog. You had to understand your catalog mm-hmm. and knew what worked with certain crowds. You know, certain places I knew that, you know, I could end with Raw. I could end with Warm It Up.
And usually the video, because by then Yo MTV Raps was rocking all over the nation, and you knew that the song you had with your video, you could do.
Yeah, it was a high joint.
Mm-hmm. I would cheat. Because I knew how to freestyle. Like, I remember doing a show in, like, Houston, and they had no clue who I was, but I freestyled off of a Ghetto Boys beat and won them over. That's because my songs were really regional. So,
you know what? I'm so glad you said that shit. Before anything, we were living in London at the time, so we had to go on ninth-hand information.
Yeah.
What happened that night of the freestyle between you and Supernet?
Oh, that was just...
In 94.
That was a situation where, I was known for freestyling, you know, on the radio and all of that. And a lot of people knew that I could freestyle. And I was cool with Organized Confusion. And they were working with Supernat. And he was in the studio talking about how he was the greatest freestyler. And they were like, well, yo, Craig G could probably take you. So we were supposed to battle on Bobbito.
Okay.
Live on the radio, and I think Buck Wild and a few other people were going to bring their drum machines, and Nat didn't show up. So I'm at the New Music Seminar, and I'm just chilling. I'm with, like, Diamond D and them, and he was on stage, and they just asked him. They were like, yo, what's up with the battle with you and Craig G? And if you ever see the video, he kind of looks out into
the crowd.
It's
on video?
Yeah, they have, like, clips of it on video, yeah.
Is it on YouTube?
Yeah, it should be.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, it's like clips of it. It's probably from the freestyle or the rap movie.
Okay.
But he called me out, and
called you out.
Yeah. Yo, Craig, where you at? What is that? That's a call out, right?
Yes.
And then imagine him saying that, and you turn around, and Grandmaster Caz is standing next to you, who's like part of some of the most legendary battles. I walked on stage with a 40-ounce in my hand. I wasn't prepared to battle him, but I did know, and I knew I was the underdog, and I used it against him, basically. That's pretty much what happened. Like, I baited him. I said a regular rhyme.
I knew some information. Nobody told me. I researched everybody. I knew he was from Indiana. And it was perfect timing. Like I said, when you go back home to Indiana, get Mike Tyson out the slammer. And he couldn't recover, basically, is what it was. I talk to him a lot. Like, you know, he lives in Cali, and we might work on some music at some point. We don't have the scheduling like that. But,
right.
You know, to me, it kind of helped me because it took me from being this old school rapper to being able to work my way into the underground and have like a slightly second career from it.
Yeah, and the ripples that caused.
Yeah.
I don't know. I forget. I think Tim Westwood was talking about like.
Yeah.
And this
yeah.
before the internet. So it was such a viral moment.
Yeah.
That it just became something on its own. But I never
sometimes
knew.
I could be an asshole. And I remember at the end of the battle, I had a stack of cards from record labels and I threw them all in the trash.
Really?
Yeah. I threw them all in the trash. Because wow. I was like, nobody was checking for me. So if it ain't genuine, I don't want to be the flavor of the month.
Right.
So, you know, I threw them all in the trash. I had Rowdy Records. I had a stack of cards from labels. I threw them all in the garbage.
Kane, did you ever have any battles of note on, I mean, during that, the period of where you're coming up, like, did any MCs ever try to challenge you, like?
I mean, I started as a battle rapper. That's all I did.
Really?
Yeah, that's all I did until I met Biz, and that's how I met Biz. I met Biz battling. I asked him for a battle.
You never saw him with Keith Murray was rapping for him?
No.
Cut that out, man. Cut it out, man.
You don't know what are we talking about.
You ever saw that? Hey, Keith.
Yeah. Now, well, Keith was 15, man. You know, he was 15 just really getting started, man. Cut it out, man.
Nah, man. He did it to me, man. You say a rhyme in front of Kane, and Kane would just say a rhyme that'll top your rhyme by 95 decibels of a bar, and you just be like, okay, let me just go back home and throw those other rhyme books away,
nah,
too.
Nah, Keith was like, nah. Remember, his name wasn't even Keith Murray. His rap name was Do Damage at the time.
Damage.
Wow. What year was this?
I don't know, 88 maybe.
But, you know, coming up during that time, like if you lived in a certain neighborhood and they knew you could rhyme, you couldn't leave a house without battling with somebody.
I mean, that's all I did.
Do you remember the whole Jazz Fresh situation?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hear of it in Philly, but I don't. Did you and Jazz Fresh know each other from Philly or just?
No, you know, I just found out maybe like 2 years ago that we had battled prior to After Midnight.
Really?
I didn't even know that. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I remember battling someone at the rooftop that had dissed Biz Markie, and I stepped up and battled him there.
Okay.
I didn't know that that was the same dude from After Midnight.
Okay.
I remember the After Midnight thing, and I know it was a time issue. I don't know whether I got there late or what was going on. I can't really remember. And then we got on, and I guess dude asked for the battle. We came up, and we went. And I don't know if we went on maybe two rounds, maybe.
Right.
And dude didn't want to stop. Dude didn't want to stop. And then Lady B told him, listen, you need to stop. you need to stop. Because for sure, at first she said it to me, like, yo, we need to finish the show. And then, but dude didn't want to stop.
Oh, just mid-show? He was like, I'll battle you.
Yeah, this was during the show.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah.
And then first Lady B told me, you know? So I was ready to go on with the show.
Right.
You know, because I knew that, because I already, at the rooftop, I already gave it to him.
Right.
And it was happening again. But dude, you know, he didn't want to stop. And then Lady B told him, like, you really need to stop. I'm gave him that look, like, you know, I'm doing you a favor.
Right.
But dude was relentless with it, you know?
I see.
And then I threw him, I think, $100 at him. I was like, yo, here you go, man. Here goes something for your troubles, man. Something like being, being arrogant, you know?
Mm.
Damn. But yeah, I mean, I'm just finding out that it was the same dude, you know. I tried to me and Charlie Mack was talking about
just
him.
Just performed by Ultra Magnetic Friday in Philly.
Yeah, the Juice Crew joint we did though for Charlie Mack.
Yeah.
Cause I was telling Charlie Mack to bring him because he said the dude still talks about it. I was like,
yo, dude.
I'm like, I'd love to see this guy.
The legend of Kane versus Jazz Fresh is like bigger than what actually happened. I'm like, glad you told me what actually like happened.
The Loch Ness Monster.
I've yet to hear. I don't know if it's on tape or video or anything.
No, like Charlie Mack said that he's like still today. He'd be like, "Y'all know I won. Y'all know I won."
Oh, like, my
that I can attest to.
Yeah, that's like the garbage man. Says, "You know I ran for 150 yards in high school."
Oh, Polkai.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I give Duke credit. He didn't back down, you know what I'm saying? And right. He wanted to keep it going. But what it was like we was in the middle of a show. And I mean, it was like, you're not winning right now.
It was unprofessional. Yes, I see. No,
you know, but I mean, but it you know, it, yeah, that's what that was.
Wow. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, I can go on forever. It's about to be like 0 o'clock in the morning.
Top shelf.
Yes.
Top
shelf. I will say, yes, ladies and gentlemen, please, please support Top Shelf 1988. Can we expect any other offspring videos?
Part two, three, four.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely want to have some visuals in the future. We're going to have some crazy vinyl next year. And
yeah, you know, will it be available on hard? That's that's the most important
part. Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
On wax.
Absolutely.
Super on important.
Wax. Yeah, absolutely. Can I just say one thing?
Yes, absolutely.
So in 1988, I was 10 years old in Pittsburgh. I was a paper boy, like a real paper, like I delivered newspapers. Mm-hmm. And I used that money to go to the record store to buy tapes. And they were tapes of everyone that's in this room. And then I flash forward to 1990 at the Syria Mosque when Third Base and Big Daddy Kane, Digital Underground, were performing, and I was there with my brother and one of his friends. Kane, you came out in a hot tub. They pushed you out in a hot tub.
Yeah, that's why I'm trying to like chill. That's what he's telling me.
Ladies, y'all forgive me, ladies. Ladies, y'all forgive me.
Y'all is it old time when I was showing her story? I'm sitting here like
Speedos.
Speedos.
He had the biker shorts on.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I mean,
sexual chocolate, ladies and gentlemen. Sexual chocolate.
Nah, that shit worked back then.
Oh my goodness, it worked.
But let me tell you how much of an honor it is to just be here with you guys. It's like really sort of a surreal experience for me. So it's an honor to be here and to have worked with you in some capacity and to, you know, bring this project to light. And, you know, one of my main things with this project is not just like, yeah, go listen to Top Shelf 1988. Like, definitely do, because it's super dope. But also listen to everything else. Listen to Long Live the Kane. Listen to Light as a Rock. Listen to all the different records that came out then. And it's like a celebration of that time. And it's a reminder of like, yo, shit was dope. You know what I mean? And yeah. And that's like what I came up listening to. Like, that's like basically all I listened to. And so to me, it's important to always shine a light on it.
We have to invest in our art and our artists. Yes, you're right. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you very much for coming to. Normally I tell my crew to give it up, but I'm the only person here.
We'll give it up for each other.
Give it up for each other. So on behalf of the Top Shelf 1988 crew and the QLS crew, this is Questlove. Thank you very much for joining us. This was a special edition of Questlove Supreme. I'll see you on the next go-round. Peace.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. This classic episode was produced by the team at Pandora. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.